This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Sisters in Crime is a group that asks tough questions like, how many hours does it take for rigor mortis to set in? Or which critters are most likely to feast on dead bodies? The group is a collection of women crime writers and readers who meet regularly to support each other's writing. They also talk with people who work in the world of crime, like forensic investigators and police detectives. The Triangle chapter of Sisters in Crime is now out with its second anthology. It's called Carolina Crimes, 21 Tales of Need, Greed, and Dirty Deeds. The book centers on obsession and brings to life stories that feel right at home in North Carolina, like the guy who leases his land for wind turbines and is slowly driven mad, or a cosmetics demo at a Raleigh beauty convention that goes horribly wrong. Joining me now is Nora Gaskin-Estimer. She is a writer and editor of this collection. Hello, Nora.
Hi, Frank.
Also joining me in the studio, Liz McGuffey, a writer and contributor. Hi, Liz.
Hi. Thank you.
Nora, let me ask you about this second collection by this local chapter of Sisters in Crime. Give us a sense of what we find between the covers here.
A little bit of everything. One of the things that makes it a lot of fun is to see how many different interpretations of the idea of obsession there can be. They range from sibling rivalry to professional jealousy to just good old-fashioned what goes on behind closed doors. But the different takes on the theme of obsession make it a lot of fun to read. And I should also mention, even though these are dealing with crimes, there's a lot of humor in the book. People laugh out loud reading it.
A lot of humor and a real opportunity, and I think maybe mysteries have always offered this opportunity for a lot of the sort of the granular personal relationships that end up provoking most crime and provoking any kind of sympathy we might have for either the victim or the culprit, right?
Yes, exactly.
Liz, tell us about your own foray into crime writing, because you're relatively new to this genre, right?
I am. This is my first crime story. I'm relatively new to writing. But I heard about this anthology, and I submitted a story, and I had a story, but I had to change it a little bit to ramp up the obsession, and so I rewrote it, and fortunately, it was accepted.
Well, tell us more about your story. Give us some of the background.
Well, this story was actually inspired by a dream I had, and it's about two men, polar opposites, who live in L.A., Victor Zuckerman is a nondescript, introverted, family-oriented architect who designs sets for MGM. Michael Falstaff is his opposite. He's a flashy guy, a good-looking guy. He's a freelance talent agent who wants to make it big in L.A.
And Veronica Lake, not in person or in body, But she makes an appearance in
this.
She does
make an appearance.
She's very important to this.
Because she's very important to it because in his early adult life, Vic develops an obsession for Veronica Lake.
Was that part of the dream? Because it's been a long time since I thought about Veronica Lake.
No, it wasn't.
An actress who, by the way, precedes me by decades.
Right.
So,
yes.
You know, she's somebody who's been in the woodwork for, you know, and in our minds for a long time. Was she in your dream?
She was not.
She
just popped into the story all by herself.
Story. Well, maybe you can read a little bit from your story and set it up for us if you need to.
All right. Well, my story is divided. It alternates between a true crime story broadcast, which is reenacting this crime, and the narrative of the story. So my story begins with the TV broadcast. Good evening, folks, and welcome to True Crime Stories. I'm Dan Banter, your host for tonight's show. Our investigators will reveal to you the facts and the mystery that still surround this fascinating crime that we call the case of the battered bungalow. On May 25th, 2015, Mr. Victor Zuckerman, a 94-year-old Los Angeles native, rammed his 1976 Oldsmobile 98 repeatedly into the house at 2309 Flagmore Place in the Hollywood Hills, right here in Los Angeles. It seemed as if he had calculated the space between the middle stone pillars of the house to make sure his tank of a car could pass through. His aim was perfect. The front wall withstood the impact for the first few hits, but eventually it collapsed. Once the facade was breached, Mr. Zuckerman continued to attack the interior until the house was destroyed. A neighbor, drawn to the loud commotion, heard him scream, "Bleep you, Falstaff," with the final strike. Who is Zuckerman, and who is Falstaff? How are they related? When we return, we'll tell you more about this strange and tragic event in Hollywoodland.
There is writer Liz McGuffey reading an excerpt from her short story, The Case of the Battered Bungalow, part of a new anthology, Carolina Crimes, 21 Tales of Need, Greed, and Dirty Deeds. I'm also joined by the book's editor, Nora Gaskin-Estheimer. First of all, I should tell you, I don't know if you know this, but Dan Banter is my given name. Frank Stasio is actually an air name.
You're kidding.
Dan Banter is really how I was christened. Not true. I also love the fact that you put bungalow in this, because bungalow was a word, Perry Mason, this was, hey, remember, and I learned what a bungalow was from watching Perry Mason, and also blackmail, which is a term that had not come to me. Very cool stuff, and of course, the story proceeds. Nora, let me ask you, as the editor, what are you looking for now when you're editing these stories to put a collection like this together?
Some variety. I mentioned earlier that the interpretation of the theme ranged widely, and I saw that as a very good thing. I wanted to have to represent that range of theme in the book itself. I wanted some variety in terms of the subgenre. Crime fiction or mysteries is a big umbrella. It includes everything from Agatha Christie style cozy mysteries to the hard-boiled detective novels, psychological thrillers, and all. I wanted that selection, that cross-section, to be represented in the book as well.
It really is.
And I think we did that very well.
I think so. It's a fun collection because you did all of that and even some send-up of the form. And so it's all represented. If you just want a straight-up crime procedural, it's in there. As you say, Agatha Christie. And then there's some stuff that, presses the margins of mystery, but it certainly does get an obsession. So it's a fun set of reads. This is the second, and in the series, obsession being the theme this time, and you had a similar theme or different theme for the first one. You have a third one planned?
There is talk of a third book in another couple of years, and the people who put together the first anthology had the idea of doing a trilogy with sex, drugs, and rock and roll as the three themes. So the first book was entitled 19 Tales of Lust, Love, Lust, Love, and Longing. So that was the sex. And then this one with the theme of obsession would get a little bit to drugs. So there's sex and drugs. So we'll do something with rock and roll next.
All right.
And anyone listening who writes mystery stories and can tie it into rock and roll, keep your eyes and ears out for a call for submissions in another year or two.
All right. Well, talk more about that, Call for Submissions and Sisters in Crime. I'll start with you, Nora. You're both part of the Triangle chapter of this group. Tell us more about Sisters in Crime, Nora.
It is a national organization that got started in the late 80s, and a group of women mystery writers at that time realized that they were underrepresented in the media and in the publishing world. I looked up the statistics on this. At that time, women wrote 40% of the mysteries, but were getting only about 15% of the reviews in the New York Times. So a group of women mystery writers got together then to try to promote women mystery writers, try to get publications and reviewers to pay more attention, to be representative of the number of women who were active as crime writers or mystery writers. And it went from there to become a very active organization nationwide. There are at least as many chapters as there are states, and it really is geared for both writers and readers. And we have a number of people come to meetings who are readers of crime fiction and are fascinated to get a bit of a behind-the-scenes look at how this comes together. You mentioned some of the rather odd things that we wind up Googling. I think probably all of us have a little bit of fear of what would happen if somebody looked at our browsing history to see what we get up to. And we have speakers who address some rather seemingly unsavory subjects, and then you have a room full of actually very nice women sitting there listening to this stuff, absorbing it through every pore, and readers are welcome to join in that to get a sense of what goes into putting together a mystery book.
So you got stuff like, how long does it take my eyeballs to dry out if I'm dehydrated? You know,
exactly.
Google Notes, and you have speakers, right, who come in and inform you. So it's not just Google.
Yes.
You actually have guest speakers. Tell us what the range of folks who come in and inform your writers.
We had a woman who was one of the first female FBI agents in North Carolina talk about her experiences, especially some of her undercover work from years ago. We have had forensic psychologists and forensic scientists. We have had defense attorneys as well as prosecutors. We recently had a detective from the Raleigh Police Department talk about cases. We've had people who are more inside the publishing industry talk about everything from craft of writing to publicity to using social media as a writer to help spread the word about your books. So it's really covered a wide range.
Liz McGuffey, you talked about this being your first mystery and being, in fact, new to writing. Tell us, remind us about your background, because you didn't start out as a writer.
No, I was most of my life a pharmacist. So I know about when they misuse the drugs. I understand that.
That's right. Zick, in the way, that would get in the way of a good mystery, because sometimes having those drugs, you know, put you to sleep for 8 minutes is perfect.
No, it has to be precise.
That's what I mean. And then it's not really true, and you throw it out. But what is it then that you, when you get into not just the world of writing, but mystery writing, I mean, that's a real craft, or any kind of adventure like this where you have to kind of pace the information and parse it out. Did that come as a surprise?
It was a challenge
to
me. It was a real challenge to me, and Nora was really helpful in that, because she said I was giving away too much early on, so I had to revise it a little bit to keep that from happening.
What about this idea of a writer's group coming together with both writers and readers? How helpful is that, or is it for you?
It's a wonderful group. It's a very supportive group, and the nice thing about this group is that it's made up of all kinds of women, all ages, and even a few men.
That's right, and there's actually a male included in this collection.
That's
right,
right,
Nora?
Yes, there is.
Mm-hmm. So you even let guys in, which I think is reflects badly on your taste, but all right, I understand.
You have to do it these days.
We welcome our brothers.
You also write about crime, and so tell us about the kind of things, again, sort of how you set out to write a mystery. Do you have it all kind of worked out in your head, or do you?
I am what is known as a pantser, meaning as a writer, I go by the seat of my pants. So I seldom have it all worked out. I will soon be finishing a book called The Worst Thing. And for me, it's a classic case of a pantser going to work. I had a cast of characters present themselves to me. I got one character, and then within 24 hours, I had everybody else in the book with two exceptions. Two people showed up later in the process. So I had a group of characters, and I even had the title, The Worst Thing, and had to go from there to figure out what I had in my own mind and what my characters could teach me about their story. So the characters, if you'll give them their heads, they will take over and lead you right through the story itself.
Well, that sounds like it could be a real virtue for some kinds of literature, but I would think in a mystery where things do have to at some point be tied together and connected, that can be a real dangerous thing. I mean, have you ever had to pull whole stories apart because one of your characters led you into territory that made you redo the story?
I have done that. That happened. That was a book that, in fact, is not a mystery. But, yes, sometimes you have a character show up, and you think you're introducing them, you know, it might be the clerk at the store. A major character goes into a store to make a purchase, and they exchange a few words with the clerk. And the next thing you know, that clerk has inserted himself or herself into your book and insists on being there. And it's going to give the story a different twist. And you need to pay attention to that as a writer, because that is something in the back of your mind working itself out. And I don't think there are actually very many accidents in writing if you are paying attention and let the story go where it will.
Well, that's the key. Attention is the key, and then once you've got that in store, you can let your characters take you because they will always guide you rightly. What about Liz? What about readers, though? That's also interesting to me. I often think of writing as a kind of monastic profession, sitting in your cell alone with your thoughts. When you interact with readers, especially with a work in progress, I'll start with you, Nora, but I want to know from you too, Liz. Is that helpful to you? I think of writers sometimes as not wanting to interact before the work is done. Is it helpful to you?
When I switch from writer to editor, then I feel that my job is to represent the reader and to keep the writers I'm working with conscious of the fact that there will be somebody on the receiving end of all this. And while it may feel like it's a lonely business when you sit down to write, in fact, you are trying to reach the public and you're trying to connect with readers. So I take that as to be my role as the editor. And for the writer's sake, for the story's sake, I always want the story or the book I'm editing to be the best it can possibly be. And that means it has got to connect with the readers.
Does it help you, Liz? What about you, talking with readers?
Oh, yes. I think that's very helpful. I think all of us are in some sort of writing group, you know, that we share our work with, value the feedback. You're sometimes your worst judge.
Yeah.
Well, it's very hard on yourself most of the time.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Liz McGuffey, writer behind The Case of the Battered Bungalow, one of the stories featured in the collection Carolina Crimes, 21 Tales of Need, Greed, and Dirty Deeds. A writer and the editor of that collection is Nora Gaskin Estheimer, and she is with me as well. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Frank.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things. You can find out more about that book and anything we talked about today in The State of Things at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.